I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We just got done listening to Vice President J.D. Vance from the press room. Really, really, I don't know. I just think that man can speak straight to the point with nuance, with context involved in it, without taking anybody's false premise. When you get a question from the press and they set up a question for you that forces you to accept a bunch of incredibly untrue and biased things and then answer some slanted question, he's like, no, 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 we're not going to do that. We are watching...
50%.
Let's listen.
That's all.
Sorry, we'll listen to Kristi.
Since Bellmer. Governor Walz has been in charge of Minnesota, we have seen homicides go up by over 50%. That's also during Mayor Fry's tenure as well. Since President Trump took office, Governor Walz has released over 470 violent criminals back onto the streets here in Minneapolis. He has another 680 of them still within his jurisdiction that he could give to us today to face the consequences for their crimes. Because Governor Walz and Mayor Fry refuse to protect Minnesotans, and instead they protect these criminals, that's why we are here.
So there you have the Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem explaining why ICE is present in the way that they are. And who better to speak to about this issue than Tony Pham, former acting ICE director, senior fellow in Homeland Security and Immigration at America First Policy Institute. Tony, a pleasure to have you on the show with us. We are grateful for your expertise here for our audience. Tony, can you hear us okay?
Oh, Annie, my apologies. I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to chatting with you and your listeners.
Well, we are grateful for the opportunity. You've been an acting ICE director before, so observing what's going on in Minneapolis, just leading up to the moment yesterday where an ICE officer acted what very much so appears to be in defense of his life to protect his own life in the shooting of the protester who was in her vehicle. Before that moment happened, what is in the minds of those ICE agents that are on the ground? They have a directive, they're there for a purpose, and now the protesters settle in. What's it like to be in those shoes?
In that environment, it adds kind of a very difficult, vulnerable situation for these agents and officers to perform their duties in apprehension. Knowing that these agents and officers, they develop a list of individuals that they want to apprehend. So they're already focused on the operational footprint to safely be able to apprehend those individuals, take them into custody, and then take them to detention or vetting for possible removal or presentation before the immigration courts. When you add in there a circumstance where one, two, three, or multiple individuals, as we have seen in the media play out, where they physically inject themselves into a law enforcement sensitive operation, it adds another unique dynamic to the officer's psyche. They're now having to think through, okay, here's my training and here I'm going to approach this individual. Now my attention is diverted because I have this individual. What are they going to do? What are they up to? And are they going to create a harmful circumstance that I now have to react and respond to and divert my attention? And so that's why when we see all of these so-called brazen individuals who feel that they're empowered to put themselves in between the agents and officers and their target, their intended targets to apprehend, they put themselves, quite frankly, in a very untenable position because those officers are going to have to react in order to clear the field and clear the area. That leads me to the much larger, Andy, a much larger conversation of what I find to be disheartening, having lived through that environment in 2020 when these protesters would descend upon my home and targeted my wife and kids when I was the acting director was, what is that environment? Who's fomenting that personal belief that has people believing that they can actually, inject themselves into these operations. And I go back, simply put, to the wrongful and horrible rhetoric that is being pushed out there by Democratic elected officials like Jacob Frey, Mayor Pritzker in Illinois, Mayor Wu in Boston, Massachusetts, likening historically since President Trump took office, likening our law enforcement officers to Nazis and fascists. The constant barrage of having conversations and being called that, knowing that we have some, quite frankly, some unhinged people out there who are just looking for a reason or justification to impede lawful enforcement actions makes no sense. And I truly believe that they, when they constantly denigrate our law enforcement officers, they create an environment where these individuals believe that it is okay.
Yes.
Now, I will liken this. Now, this is ICE, right? And I don't mean to dominate the conversation. I'll let you get a question in.
But no.
I'm passionate
you
about
keep going. You're
supporting
doing great.
These officers.
Yeah.
These folks out there put their lives on the line every day. But let's take for a minute, remove the fact that they carry ICE on their placket or their kit, their vest, their carrier, right?
Mm-hmm.
They could legitimately be local, state law enforcement officers conducting regular operations. In that context, in general, you don't see community members or woke activists descending upon these individuals, right, as they're doing their jobs. So what differentiates, local police doing their DUI checkpoints, as I call it, versus an ICE agent trying to conduct an immigration enforcement operation? It's the rhetoric that these elected officials continually push, the false narrative that these individuals are violating people's rights, which they're not.
Yeah.
And so that's very disheartening. I'm watching 2020 replay itself early on in 2026, and that's horrible.
I really think that 2026 is going to react differently. That's my intuition. I hope I'm right. Than what took place in 2020. We're speaking with Tony Pham, former acting ICE director and senior fellow at the Homeland Security and Immigration at America First Policy Institute. I think when I'm hearing what you're saying here, you're talking about the humanity of these ICE agents. And I think that we just heard the vice president say this from the press podium there, that he acknowledged the humanity of Renee Good, the protester who was in the vehicle yesterday and was shot by the ICE agent. I mean, those are the facts. She was in a car, an ICE agent shot her. But all the context surrounding that moment really does matter. And the vice president said, maybe she panicked and she swerved or whatever. But the larger context, very much so about what you're talking about here, the rhetoric that leads into that moment, all of that rhetoric matters. It has to matter in those standpoints. And our elected officials in Minneapolis and Minnesota, they seem dead set on trying to throw gasoline on a fire. Why would they want that for their communities that they're supposed to represent and lead?
Just listening to Jacob Frey, I call him the feckless mayor of Minneapolis, right? The guy, the way he talks, the way he sounds, and what he said the other day, I quite frankly believe disqualifies him from holding elected office.
Yes.
To simply get up there. Now, if I were a local Minneapolis police officer and I'm listening to my mayor be out there throwing out the F-bomb to our fellow federal law enforcement officers, right? Partners. That's exactly what we look at from that context, was these are local, state, and federal partners whose mission is the same, that is enforcing the laws of the United States or the state or the locality. And if I'm up there listening to this mayor dropping F-bombs and telling my federal partners who are just basically doing their jobs, but then they're faced with this horrific situation where they have to react quickly, say those things, I would wonder if serving in that capacity for that mayor is the right role for me. And I don't mean to question their dedication to the law, Annie. We've lived through this through the summer of love in 2020. And I will tell you my perspective on any and all law enforcement shootings. I'm an attorney that represented police departments here locally in Virginia, right? So I understand the standard that we approach when we look at these shootings that involve law enforcement. Obviously, I take the position of, we need to temper the rhetoric. We need to calm the environment. This is a tragic situation for the individual who was shot. But, we also believe that it's a tragic situation for the officer that was put in a position where they had to take a life.
Yeah.
I've never met a client who was a police officer who wasn't shook, who was not shook to the core that they had to actually utilize their weapon that they were trained over and over again to use, because you always enter, and the multiple individuals I talked to in our depositions and briefings, I learned that they always, always regret and hate the moment where they have to make that decision. They just want to be able to go home at night to their families, and they want to make sure that folks in the community are safe. So when I look at these situations, there are two tragedies that happen. One is obviously the individual who put herself in a position to protest the operation, but also placing the officer in a position where he had to make a split decision.
Tony Pham speaking with us, former acting ICE director. I want to know what your thoughts are in your capacity as the acting ICE director. Mm-hmm. I tuned in last night, a kid had a basketball game, got home a little bit later, and I thought, gee, I wonder if Minneapolis is on fire right now. Turn on Fox News. They were covering the year anniversary of the Palisades fire. It looked like something that they had probably planned ahead of time, and they were dipping in and out of coverage of Minneapolis as well. CNN. Cameras on the ground, live shots, stand up, mostly peaceful, that type of stuff. What does it mean to you to have those constant cameras, the coverage, the spotlights? Is that harmful? Is it helpful for people to be able to see what's going on? What's your reaction to the way the media covers these types of events?
It could be helpful if there was some integrity in the coverage, right? If it shows the humanity of what these officers go through, what these officers are being asked to do. If legacy media like CNN wants to do a quick 30-second clip and cut to certain video vignettes that fit their narrative, then it's absolutely damaging, right? Absolutely 100% damaging. What I looked at, and it's more anecdotal, Andy, and forgive me for going with anecdotal evidence or basis for have this conversation, is for the last year, we heard and they played it over and over ad nauseum, all of the elected officials on the left who want to vilify these officers, due process, Abrego Garcia, we're violating their rights, ICE out, sanctuary this. But not once do you see a focus when an officer is assaulted, an ICE agent is harmed or hit or has to confront a group of violent protesters. Not once do we get that human side, that human story. I mean, for crying out loud, 60 Minutes will do a 60-minute vignette on Kamala Harris and her screw-ups, right? Or even Joe Biden and his stuttering. Forgive me for saying that. I'm sorry. I mean, that's in the past. But truth of the matter is there's no focus on the individual men and women who wake up every morning. They leave their families and they took an oath. And I always go back to reminding your listeners everywhere across the United States, we have to remember when I was the director, one of the proudest moments was recognizing that I was leading an organization that was born from the ashes of one of the worst, the worst domestic terrorist attack on U.S. soil. It killed Americans. And from those ashes, the Homeland Security Act formed. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security got folded INS under that umbrella, changed it to ICE. And our mission set was to protect the homeland through enforcement of our immigration laws, because the commission found that the individuals who committed the 9/11 attacks exploited our immigration pathways through the asylum pathways into the United States, right? And so from there, the genesis of the organization yields much respect to the men and women who joined the organization. There were a lot of legacy INS folks who were proud to sign up. You could hear it. Folks were signing up left and right, joined the military after September 11th, right?
Yes, amen.
Because we were unified as Americans. We were unified on a common mission that we were going to protect the homeland and we were going to protect our nation and secure its borders against individuals who wished to gain entry illegally into to this country to cause harm. And it surprises, it shocks me to listen to Mayor Jacob Frey stand there and exalt and extol the values and virtues of being a sanctuary city, of how many people they were able to let out of prisons and not turn over to ICE. I mean, The last data point I saw, and I believe, was we were able to capture close to 1,000 illegal aliens in the city of Minneapolis. Those are 1,000 individuals who should not have been in this country, who entered without inspection and illegally came to the U.S. and somehow relocated to Minneapolis. These individuals have criminal offenses on their records, and it was an opportunity for us to remove these individuals, right? I remember, if I may, share with you a story about how great ICE is. We were able to catch, in 2020, close to 50 to 60 individuals, some of whom had convictions for sexual assault, child sex predatory behavior. One individual even had, participating in terroristic action convictions. We were preparing for removal, and the illustrious congresswoman that, you know, we all know, I've gotten to know, up there came out on Twitter and called my team racist. For doing what? Again, it's that rhetoric, right?
Yeah.
It's the characterization of men and women who really just want to simply protect this nation by apprehending criminal aliens, but now, because of the rhetoric, they have to then battle fellow Americans when they should be, you know, expecting support in their efforts to protect our communities.
It's so important to understand what these people, these are people who sign up. They're not drafted. They're not, enlisted by their government. They sign up for this opportunity to protect and serve. And, you know, I think to myself, and I always like to look at the reversal of whatever the outcome was and just think, is this how, would we be treating the circumstances the same? And that's my final question to you, Tony Pham. What if that protester would have run over that agent and that agent would have lost his life? Would the elected officials in Minneapolis and Minnesota be advocating for the lost life of the agent, or would they say, would it be about, I shouldn't have been there in the first place? Because when I, in my mind, reverse the circumstances, I don't think that we're going to see that they're going to be consistent on the protection of life and the way they're speaking of the protester here. I think that the reversal of the circumstance, would have affirmed their worldview just as much as the one we're unfortunately currently in.
My sad belief is because of their ideological beliefs, which they're driven by, their hatred of law enforcement in general, I think it would just be a blip, right? Yeah. It would just be a blip. That life of that officer would not have been mentioned in legacy media as much as this situation is being mentioned now, and no one's asking the relevant question as to who's actually responsible for creating that environment. And it's an unfortunate thing. We've seen situations, and I'll bring up Charlie Kirk's assassination, where those individuals on the left, they would be out there celebrating the loss of life, all driven by their hatred of this president, all driven by their hatred of ICE, who's literally taking, you know, felons off the street and removing them. And I just tell you, folks, I came to this country in 1975 as a refugee at the end of the war. My family and I worked through the immigration pathways and became a naturalized citizen. We assimilated in 1985. And I had a true blessing and honor to lead that organization, recognizing that my duty to this country was to enforce the laws. That's the sentiment that is shared by every single man and woman that put on that uniform, that put on their ceramic carriers, donned that placard that says police ICE. They know they're going out there. They're ice skating uphill in certain environments, but they still do it anyway because the mission calls for protecting our country.
Well, and we are so grateful from here, from where we sit, for every single man and woman who chooses to do that, because we do not have order without them. Tony Pham, please come back and talk to us. There's going to be a lot to discuss, and we appreciate your voice on the show.
At any time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Former acting ICE director, senior fellow, Homeland Security and Immigration at the America First Policy Institute. A very quick break here at 1:30. Congressman Darren LaHood on the Annie Fry Show. We'll be right back. Rescue you.
You like romance. Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. The YouTube live chat poll today, haven't talked about it specifically as a poll a whole lot up until now, but definitely it's been a main topic of conversation. Do you believe the Minneapolis ICE shooting was justified? Yes, no, or too soon to tell? Go join us on the Annie Fry YouTube live and drop in, vote on the poll. But you can also text us thoughts if you so choose, 314-241-9797, a direct line into the show, so you can give us your thoughts on this moment in time. I don't feel as though the narrative drivers have as much of a grip at 10 and 2 on this story as the George Floyd story, the narrative that existed outside of that. Not at this point. There's so much video evidence that is out there right now. And you know, I'm gonna play a couple clips for you a little bit later in the show about how other folks are covering this particular issue. I've seen on CNN in multiple different elements, they are covering this in a way that suggests that this is potentially a justified shooting. And it used to be like that would have been not something that you would have seen in 4 or 5 years ago when it starts to hit the fan. So give us a text, 314-241-9797. Do you believe the Minneapolis shooting was justified? Yes, no, or too soon to tell? Ryan, real quick before we take a break here, because we got to get Congressman Darren LaHood on the show with us in about 4 minutes here. What's your thought? Do you know yet?
I would love to say too soon to tell, because there's a lot more information I would just personally like to see about this. But I also don't know what else I'm waiting for. I don't know that there's going to be anything that could come out that makes me go, oh, now I can see
like that
she
everything.
Really was innocent. This looks like a really difficult situation where you already, like your guest just said there, Tony Pham, you're already in a heightened situation. It's a law enforcement issue that does not regard you. You have inserted yourself into it. So you've said, I'm willing to take this risk. Now, usually that doesn't mean that something terrible is going to happen, but it did this time.
Jackie says on our YouTube channel in the comments, yes, the additional video footage from the driver's side was clear. She obstructed ICE, didn't follow orders, and proceeded to try running an officer over. He shot from in front of the vehicle. The bullet did go through the front of the windshield. So that was the entry point, which means the gun was in front of the vehicle. You can't, you know, you're not shooting through the windshield from the side. Not and following through and hitting the actual driver. You know, the one thing that I'm not sold on quite yet is that she was trying to hit him. And I appreciated J.D. Vance's comments that we were airing a little bit earlier from the press briefing that he joined Carolyn Leavitt, where he said, listen, I don't know what she was trying to do from her car. I don't know that she was driving at him to try to harm him. But everything that led up to that moment and the fact that there was an ICE officer in front of her vehicle, she drove the car towards the officer. I mean, all in a split second, the context of everything. We don't know what was going through her head at the time, but if you've put yourself in a position, like, there are consequences to our actions, and sometimes they're very unfortunate and very tragic. We're going to take a very quick break here. Congressman Darren LaHood is going to be with us when we come back. We're going to find out the latest of what's going on at Capitol Hill. Small majority there of Republicans in the House. We'll be back in just 1 minute with the congressman representing Illinois 16th District.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. I want to get straight to our next guest because I know we only have a little bit of time with him, but Congressman Darren LaHood, Illinois 16th District Representative with us right now. Congressman, thanks for fitting us into your busy schedule.
Annie, great to be with you. Happy New Year. Always good to be with you and your listeners.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well. I want to talk to you a little bit first and foremost about the spending bills. I know January 30th is your deadline. Your majority seems to be shrinking by the day by unfortunate circumstance as well. Tell me what the Republicans are doing to get this spending bill across the finish line so we don't see another government shutdown.
Yeah, well, thanks, Annie. We're actually voting this afternoon on three different appropriations bills. Next week, we'll vote on another three. What Speaker Johnson has said is we ought to get back to the functioning of government. That's passing 12 appropriations bills. The good news is these appropriations bills that we're passing in the House cut spending, help reduce the federal deficit for the first time in a long time. So we're working on that. Now, it's going to get tougher as we get towards the end of the month because these bills get larger and larger, the DOD bill and a number of other bills. But we're doing what we need to do to pass these bills, reduce spending, and get that done. I think shutting down the government as the Democrats did in the fall, we got to make sure that doesn't happen again. And so we're working very, very hard over the next 3 weeks here to make sure that we pass these appropriations bills in a fiscally minded way.
Congressman LaHood, do you feel as though the Democrats have an appetite for another shutdown?
I don't know. I would hope not. I think they did not come out a winner. The polls showed that and other things showed that. But I wouldn't put anything past Hakeem Jeffries or Chuck Schumer. You know, it's amazing, Annie, the far left wing, the Mandami wing of the Democrat Party is what's driving the agenda. And so they continue to double down on these progressive policies. And so that's really what's driving much of the Democrat primary is these a lot of members of Congress are being challenged in primaries by the far left wing of their party. And that's dictating much of the direction they're going.
We're speaking with Congressman Darren LaHood. He represents Illinois' 16th District, a member of the Ways and Means Committee, House Intel Committee, and the Select Committee on the CCP. Congressman, we here, us Illinois residents, are looking at what's going on in Minnesota, observing all of the fraud that is being uncovered. And I am longing for the opportunity. I guess we got to get, a grassroots reporter on X to try to scoop some of the stuff going on in Illinois. You think we have any fraud that could be uncovered here in the Prairie State that might make a difference in what those Illinois taxpaying residents, federal taxpayers as well, are experiencing?
Of course, it's Illinois. You talk about the Prairie State, and I love the Prairie State, but I don't necessarily like Cook County, and I don't like the city of Chicago and some of the stuff that they've been engaged in. And so, as you may be aware, Annie, the Trump administration has paused the funding that goes to Illinois to these social service agencies, similar to the funding that went to Minnesota. I mean, to put this in perspective, we haven't fully uncovered this in Minnesota, but it could be up to $9 billion that was fraudulently stolen from taxpayers. So with no oversight, no responsibility, no inspector general looking into this. And so I'm glad the Trump administration has paused that money coming to Illinois. There needs to be a full accounting on this. We in Congress have a responsibility and an obligation to make sure that federal taxpayer money is being spent the correct way. And I wish I had more confidence in the bureaucrats in Illinois to do that. I simply don't. And when you look at the shenanigans that went on in Minnesota at these daycare centers, the lack of oversight, the lack of following up to make sure things were being done the right way, I think in a country where we're $38 trillion in debt, all of this needs to be brought to the attention of the federal government, and people need to be held responsible.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of people right now, at least before this incident with ICE took place yesterday with the loss of life with a protester who decided to run her car into an ICE officer, everybody was talking about Minnesota fraud, and Governor Tim Walz was on the hot seat. You know, I think you look at a governor like Tim Walz and you say, did you know what was going on in your state, the fraud that was taking place, or did you not know? One is just as bad, if not worse, than the other. If that's taking place in the state of Illinois, do you suspect that the likes of Governor J.B. Pritzker are aware of fraud and corruption happening and a party to it?
Well, he can't be. There's no way. And I hope it's not going on in Illinois, and I want to give us the benefit of the doubt. But if it's happening in places like Minnesota, it sure as heck could be happening in Illinois. And you raise a good point, Annie. Remember, Tim Walz was all set to run for a third term. He was, enthusiastic about running for a third term and running on his record. That abruptly stopped this week when he decided he's not running. He will be brought before some type of either a deposition on a civil case or potentially criminal deposition and maybe before a grand jury to account for what happened in Minnesota. And so you're seeing the ramifications of that play out. And again, we have a responsibility and obligation on behalf of taxpayers in Illinois to make sure that money's being spent correctly. And if it's not, you know, people need to be held responsible.
Yeah. And we're looking to you and to your fellow congressmen and women to do everything you can, especially with the power of the purse, to provide that oversight and protect the taxpayer. Someone's got to do it. And it doesn't look
happening. Yeah. And let me just mention today, the Trump administration announced a new position, an assistant attorney general at the Department of Justice that will solely be in charge of looking into fraud. And so this is a step in the right direction. We look forward to working with them particularly in Illinois, to make sure that we are uncovering any fraud that exists.
That's fantastic to hear. Keep in touch with us and let us know how that's going. We are rooting hard for it as taxpayers and citizens. Congressman Darren LaHood, thank you for the time. It's great to have you back. Happy New Year.
Always good to be with you. Thank you, Annie. Take care.
Bye-bye. Illinois' 16th District Representative there talking about the effort, which we've heard a couple times now from people who we've talked to today, spotlighting the fact that the administration is not, this fraud thing, there's not going to be a story that scoops their interest in exposing this. You combine this with a lot of the other economic things that this administration has done, and you pretty quickly get an idea of how vast and important to a responsible economic plan fraud has to be a part of it. We have to be looking into where people are taking advantage of our system, abusing our system, and essentially taking advantage of the taxpayer. I think one of the things that ticks me off the most about what's going on in Minnesota is just how brazen it was. Like, they probably tried to be sneaky at first, and they're like, I don't think anyone's paying any attention. And then that just incrementally gets worse and worse, and then now you have a transportation. I guess good on them for buying cars, but they forgot to drive them and move them for an entire year's worth of time while taking millions of dollars from the taxpayer. Meanwhile, in the economy, while we are trying to claw back some of those fraudulent dollars that have been taken away from the taxpayer, listen to this CNBC news report here on the economy.
Up. This is unreal, the movement in this number. Minus $29.4 billion. We cut it basically in half. Just consider this. In March, it was $136 billion. Right now, it's a whisker under $30 billion. We haven't been that small in a long time. I don't have enough records here to go back that far, but you're going back a ways. And here's the news on why it moved lower.
So you got CNBC reporting on the national deficit that we have. This has been cut in half.
Yeah, the trade deficit.
The trade deficit,
The numbers he was giving were much better than half. I mean, he was like, look, this is half, but it's really like a lot more in the favor of almost not a deficit at all. You know, going from $130 billion down to about $30. That's incredible in 1 year.
The news just keeps getting better and better and better on the economic front. And this is what we were told, of course, by President Trump, is, you know, what was going to happen in 2026, that there were going to be things that were going to materialize, that had been put into place, but were going to materialize here in 2026. And in the midst of all of that, we are starting to see some of that. The 2025 GDP growth quarter one, which GDP growth in quarter one would pretty much be a Biden thing for the most part.
Yeah.
Minus 0.5%. Quarter two, GDP growth 3.8%. Quarter three, 4.3%. Quarter four, 5.4%. So growing quarter over quarter.
Wow.
On projected 2025 GDP growth overall, plus 3.25. So you have to, like, I have to. I'm not an economist. I get to talk to some here on the radio. I'm really interested in the multi-front war that this president has waged against all the different areas that have caused take it to a super small scale. Like, sometimes you have to go to somebody or yourself and go, let's discuss our relationship with money. Let's talk about how we handle money. what we have, what we spend, what we save, what you invest in. And I mean, you could do a 360 on what the United States, the relationship that they had with money. The people who make those decisions, those elected officials that we send to Washington, D.C. or to Jefferson City or to Springfield. What is our relationship with money? And those elected officials, they never have enough of it. And there's no limit to how much they're going to take. Take, for instance, the Mamdani clip that I played where he had that discussion with Martha McCallum. Martha McCallum says when he's candidate Mamdani, you know, there are New Yorkers, wealthy New Yorkers, who pay 50% of their income, of their intake, 50% of their income in taxes. What is enough? What is a fair share? And Mamdani's like, I'm only asking for 2% more. And he says in that clip, this is the part that ticks me off to no end. It's not just, I want him to pay 2%, I want him to pay 52%. He says, and it'll be good for them. No, it'll be good for everybody else. You want to talk about fair share? Is there anybody out there not paying any taxes that could maybe pay 2% of their taxes? You're going to raise taxes on them? And in a socialistic society, of course, you're going to, you know, soak the rich to provide what the, quote, government thinks is good for them with your money. This is why I hate a smile. The service with a smile is really like theft with a smile. Mamdani's got this Joker grin on his face because he's so confident that he knows what's good for you. And he doesn't give two shakes of the fist as to whether or not you agree with him because he just knows better. I repeat. Socialists and communists sell you that they're going to help you defeat the man. They're going to take the man down because the little people need someone to help beat, you know, the capital TM, the man. And if they're successful at getting elected to help you take down the man, guess what? They just become the man. The man doesn't go away, and the little people always stay the same. They're just so power hungry that they want to seize upon that opportunity to soak up that power and become the man, and then, boy, aren't you lucky to have him. Service with a smile. It's really awful. It's as un-American as it gets. And New York is gonna see a lot of that. In the meantime, when you look at all of the different fronts that this administration is fighting back for economic prosperity, like beyond your wildest imagination, here in the United States of America, it's not just about the money coming in. It's about the money going out. Where are we spending our money? We shouldn't be spending money in all these NGOs that are ridiculous and don't do anything anymore. We shouldn't be spending the taxpayer dollars on, these ludicrous indoctrinating type of programs that are investing in a groupthink. That in the United States of America, under the First Amendment, we don't have to groupthink like that. We're not going to spend our money that way anymore. We are going to spend money on building up a military that says, here is where our border is. This side, ours. This side, yours. There's a line. We're going to enforce it. And we're going to look in places like Minnesota and everywhere those tentacles go out and say, if you're abusing the taxpayer dollar, you're going to go to jail for it. That's what we want to see. We want to see you locked up, not chastised. We want to see you put away. So that the next person who has the opportunity to try to pull something like this knows that if you're going to screw around about this, you're going to find out what a jail cell looks like. We're investing. We're investing in our home front. We're investing in building jobs and building infrastructure and building production, onshoring, Buy American. Trying to assess, you know, the national debt. It's everywhere. This administration, like, where? I'm not an economist, so I wouldn't even know. We should ask one. What are they not looking at?
I'm always leery when a politician, government official at any level, local, national, whatever, says, oh, we're making major investment. Because typically that means they're taking your money and they're putting it in something else. They don't have any money of their own. But Trump, when he says investment, I mean, basically the whole first quarter of the year, he was bringing massive $1 to $1 trillion actual private investment into the company. That's going to play out in 2026.
Two more exciting clips when we come back. One from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and another from your president talking about income tax. You want to hear what he has to say? Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The IRS called criminal investigations, and these men and women, they are cool cats. They can take apart a balance sheet, and they can knock down a door and arrest someone. Like, they go out on patrols, they can make arrests. It's this very interesting hybrid force, about 2,500 of them, and they led the charge here. So it was IRS CIs who they uncovered the initial fraud and the prosecutions. So it's with that group, with other groups at IRS, and with the powers of the Treasury to track where the money came from, where it's going. We saw this very unsettling news yesterday that many people involved here with the administration of these programs have tried to go back and they recreate documents, change documents, and we're not going to have that. We are going to hold people accountable. We're going to press this to the full extent possible. And like I said, I think that this may just be, you know, it's a cold day outside, so this could be the tip of the iceberg here in Minnesota, but it's probably may not be as prevalent, but the dollars may be bigger and larger in other states. And just to put this in perspective for American taxpayers, for American families, the GAO, the General Accounting Office, believes that there is somewhere between $300 and $600 billion of annual fraud, roughly 10% of government spending, that disappears due to fraud.
That's crazy. That's Secretary Bessent talking about the scope of fraud. You remember when we heard Steve Moore come on and be like, I like the penny tax or the penny plan or whatever it is. Cut 1% of spending across the board.
Yeah.
And it's like laughable to suggest that you'd be able to cut 1% of spending. One penny for every dollar. Here you have the Treasury Secretary saying the GAO believes that 10% of spending is probably soaked in fraud. That's crazy. And now we have, like, the thing that I appreciate so much is we have an administration right now that is so focused on economy that this isn't gonna be a we'll get to it thing. This is gonna likely be one of the main legacies of what this moment in time, this administration is able to accomplish.
Well, you said it, I think it was maybe before the show or in a break, that they're announcing, J.D. Vance announced that there's going to be an assistant attorney general that's just focused on fraud now. And I've somehow missed that, looked it up. That's a fact. That's happening right now.
Yeah. And then I want to add, I said I was going to play two clips for you here real quick. One other thing, and boy, will this be music to many of our ears. I know it certainly will be mine. The president of the United States is from yesterday.
That at some point in the not too distant future, you won't even have income tax to pay because the money we're taking in is so great. It's so enormous that you're not going to have income tax to pay.
Okay.
Okay, I accept.
Go to break. There's nothing else to add here.
We don't need the details.
No, I don't need to understand it.
If there's no,
I don't understand my taxes anyway.
Income tax, then that's better for peoples.
Can you imagine what the state of Illinois is going to do to us if our federal income taxes get wiped away? They'll be like,
I know what
more,
we'll
more
do.
Drugs.
We'll change the Constitution in Illinois,
or we'll just do what we want and make them come after us in court
right.
Until we've soaked them for as much as we possibly can. I mean, folks, the economy, it's the economy stupid. That's what James Carville says about the elections. That is still accurate. And when you're talking about having the trade deficit, in less than a year's amount of time, the amount of money that is coming into this administration, into our coffers. Now, Supreme Court, what do you got to say about tariffs? We need to know. and we need to know right now. They'll decide when we come back. No, just kidding.
Tomorrow.
We'll be right back. Don't go away.